Welcome to our deep dive into British colonialism in India. It's a huge topic, almost two centuries. We'll focus on the East India Company and how they went from just traders to, well, rulers.
It really is fascinating how a company focused on profit ended up governing a massive and a really diverse subcontinent. We'll look at how that happened and why it still matters today.
Okay, let's start at the beginning. How did Europeans first start interacting with India?
Trade. It all started with trade. European powers, especially the Portuguese, Dutch, British, they came to India looking for valuable things, spices, textiles. They set up little enclaves along the coasts, and their influence grew through these trade networks.
So in the beginning, it was all about business.
Yeah.
No interest in actually conquering territory.
Exactly. Early on, most European agents, with a few exceptions like, say, Warren Hastings, didn't know much about Indian languages or customs. Their main goal was to get good trade deals and set up profitable trade routes.
And the East India Company, they were a major player even in this early phase.
Absolutely. The East India Company, started in 1600, was a purely commercial operation. They set up these trading posts along the Indian coast, mostly focused on textiles, spices, things like that. They were operating within the existing Mughal rule, which was still a powerful force at that time.
So, still just traders then, not rulers. When did that change?
Well, the Mughal Empire starts to decline in the 18th century, and, you know, that created this power vacuum. This was an opportunity for the East India Company. They had their own private army, and they started using it more and more to intervene in local disputes, power struggles.
So they saw a chance to take advantage of the instability.
Yes, in a way. They started making alliances with local rulers, often playing one ruler against another. This helped them gain territory and expand their influence beyond those initial trading posts.
It sounds like they were playing a very clever game, this power politics. Was the British government back in England involved in this at all?
Oh, definitely. The British Parliament saw the potential wealth and power India offered, and they started taking a more active interest. They began passing what were called the Regulating Acts, trying to control the East India Company, make them more accountable to the Crown.
So Parliament was trying to, what, rein in the company's power? But maybe also starting to see the potential for direct British rule in India.
That's a sharp observation. The creation of the Board of Control in 1783 was a big step toward Parliament having more control over Indian affairs. It was kind of laying the groundwork for what would eventually become the British Raj. It's interesting how a business could get so powerful that it ends up attracting the government's attention and control.
This makes me wonder, when did the East India Company actually go from traders to rulers? Was there a specific turning point?
It wasn't one single event. It was more gradual. But a key moment was the Battle of Plassey in 1757.
I've heard of that. Wasn't that a major victory for the East India Company?
It was. The company's forces, under Robert Clive, they defeated the Nawab of Bengal. This gave them control over Bengal's resources, especially their textile industry. It was very lucrative. This really marks a turning point from traders to rulers.
So Bengal was a crucial step towards their eventual dominance.
Exactly. The wealth from Bengal allowed them to expand, build up their military, and gradually take control of more and more of India. It also led to some big changes within the company itself.
What kind of changes?
Well, as they gained more territory, they needed systems to manage and govern these new areas. They started creating administrative structures, courts, a whole bureaucracy to collect taxes and keep things in order.
So they were basically turning from a trading company into an actual governing body.
That's it. They weren't just merchants looking for profit anymore. They were becoming administrators, lawmakers, rulers. This change, while gradual and often faced resistance, marked a really profound shift in what they were doing in India. This change from company to government had a huge impact on India.
Let's talk about that. What were some of the biggest social, economic, political changes that came about because of company rule?
One of the most immediate changes was in the economy. The East India Company's policies, which were based on this idea of mercantilism, were all about maximizing profit for the company and for Britain. This, unfortunately, often hurt Indian industries and their traditional economic systems.
Do you have any specific examples of that?
Sure. Take the Indian textile industry. India had been famous for centuries for its textiles. You know, they were really sought after in Europe. But the company, to protect British textile manufacturers, put these heavy taxes and limits on Indian textiles, which made them less competitive.
So they basically destroyed a thriving industry in India to help their own industry back home.
Yeah, sadly, that's what happened. And it wasn't just textiles. It was the same pattern in other industries. The company wanted raw materials. things like cotton, indigo, opium, they shipped all this back to Britain to feed their Industrial Revolution. This focus on raw materials, while it made money for the company, led to the decline of a lot of traditional Indian industries and crafts.
What about agriculture? How did company rule affect the lives of Indian farmers?
Well, the changes in agriculture were really dramatic and often devastating. The company introduced new systems of land ownership, like the zamindari system in Bengal. This created a class of landlords who didn't have much connection to the land or the people working on it. They just wanted to collect as much revenue as possible, which meant more debt and hardship for the peasants.
So even though the company wanted to streamline how it collected taxes, it ended up creating a system that was more exploitative for a lot of farmers.
That's right. And then there was this push towards cash crops, often enforced by the company. Farmers had to grow indigo, opium. These were profitable for the company, but it meant less land for food crops, leading to shortages and famines.
It wasn't just the economy that was affected. How did company rule impact Indian society in general? Did it lead to any cultural or intellectual shifts?
Definitely. One of the most significant changes was the introduction of English education. Now, initially, this was meant to create Indians who could work in the company's administration, but it ended up having a much bigger impact. A new generation of Indians were exposed to Western ideas, literature, political thought. This played a big role in the rise of Indian nationalism.
So in a way, they created the conditions for their own eventual downfall.
You could say that. The very things they used to strengthen their hold on India, English education, new administrative systems, exposure to the West, all of this contributed to a growing sense of Indian identity and a desire for self-rule.
This brings up another question. How did the company react to this growing discontent, to the resistance movements that started emerging?
At first, they tried to suppress it. They saw any kind of dissent as a threat and used their military to crush rebellions. But they couldn't ignore the unrest forever.
Was there a particular event that forced them to rethink things?
Yeah, the Sepoy Mutiny of 1857. Some people call it the First War of Indian Independence. This was a huge rebellion. It was triggered by several things, including these new rifle cartridges. They were greased with animal fat, which was offensive to both Hindu and Muslim sepoys. This rebellion really shook the foundations of British rule in India.
The Sepoy Mutiny, it sounds like a real turning point. How did it change things for the British in India?
Oh, it really sent shockwaves through the British establishment. It showed how vulnerable company rule was. They had to completely rethink their strategy in India.
What happened after that? Did the East India Company get back in control?
Well, after the mutiny, there was a major power shift. The British government realized things were unstable and decided they needed to take direct control. So they dissolved the East India Company.
Wow, the whole company was just dismantled. What happened then?
That was the start of what we call the British Raj. Queen Victoria became Empress of India, and it was a whole new era of direct British rule. The administration became more centralized, more bureaucratic. It was all about strengthening British power.
So it was like they were tightening their grip after all the chaos of the mutiny.
Exactly. They wanted to prevent future uprisings and make sure their colony was stable. They appointed a viceroy who represented the crown, and they created this whole system of provincial and district administrations to govern this huge area.
Did this new system change anything for ordinary Indians? Did the British try to address any of the problems that had led to the mutiny?
They did try to make some reforms. They realized they couldn't just rule by force anymore. They made some changes to the land ownership systems to ease the burden on peasant farmers. And they invested in things like railroads, canals, telegraph lines. These things helped the British, of course, but they also changed India in a big way.
So there was this effort to modernize India under the British Raj.
Yes, but it's important to remember that this modernization also served British interests. The railroads, for instance, they helped move troops around and transport raw materials to the ports for export back to Britain.
Right. It wasn't just out of the goodness of their hearts. There was a self-serving aspect to it. Did this new way of governing change their attitude towards Indian culture and society?
There was a shift, definitely. After 1857, the British realized they needed to understand Indian culture better if they wanted to keep things stable. They were more careful, trying not to do things that might cause more unrest.
So they were trying to avoid the mistakes that led to the mutiny.
Precisely. This new approach meant they tried to work more closely with Indian elites. They started appointing Indians to advisory councils, giving them some roles in the lower levels of the administration. But this doesn't mean they were willing to give up control. The British still believed it was their right to rule India. They had this idea of a civilizing mission.
So even with some changes, they still felt superior.
Yes, absolutely. This paternalistic, kind of condescending attitude was there in everything they did. They still thought of Indians as needing their guidance. And the funny thing is, their efforts to instill British values and systems, it backfired.
How so?
Well, the more English education spread, the more Indians were exposed to ideas like democracy, liberty, self-determination. And this, in turn, fueled the growth of Indian nationalism. New movements emerged demanding more autonomy and eventually complete independence.
So the tools the British used to strengthen their rule ended up undermining them.
Exactly. Indian nationalism, with leaders like Gandhi and Nehru, became this powerful force. The push for self-rule grew stronger, especially after the First World War. The British had to make concessions. They introduced some reforms, like the Government of India Act of 1935, which gave limited self-rule in some provinces, but it wasn't enough. People wanted full independence.
It sounds like the British were in a tough spot. They wanted to keep control, but there was so much pressure for independence.
It was a balancing act that just couldn't last. The nationalist movement, fueled by years of resentment, was unstoppable. And finally, in 1947, after centuries of colonial rule, India achieved independence.
This deep dive has been really fascinating. We've covered so much, from those early European traders to the rise and fall of the East India Company, the British Raj, and finally, Indian independence.
It's a story with both dark and bright moments. It shows how resilient the Indian people are and the impact colonialism had on the subcontinent. What we've talked about today is really just the beginning. There's so much more to explore.
Absolutely. And our listeners, we encourage you to keep learning about this period in history. There are so many stories to uncover, different perspectives to consider. Keep diving deeper into this fascinating period. And we'll see you on our next deep dive.